Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc, Geordi Specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasites, new heights, phaser fights, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle stations.
Next generation on your favorite station. We start the series, but when we are gone, it'll feel beyond. We start the series. It's the next generation on your favorite station. We start the series.
Wow, guys, it's been so long since we talked. We didn't have a show on Thursday because of Thanksgiving here in the States, and we didn't have a show on Sunday, Stunt Treks, because of Thanksgiving here in the States. So our comic corner here is the first time we've talked since 2 weeks ago. So I'm kind of stoked about that. And I'm really, really psyched about Star Trek Picard Countdown issue number one. We're going to be talking about that tonight. As usual, our studio line is 646-668-2433. Give us a call and share your thoughts. Or if you'd like to win this excellent Blu-ray copy of Star Trek Origins, I'm still holding it in my hot little hands, and I'd love to give it to you. It has the episode The Cage, Where No Man Has Gone Before, Space Seed, Aaron and Murphy, and Trouble with Tribble. And all you have to do is call 646-668-2433 and sing our theme song, the one you just heard. Call, sing that back to me, and I'll drop this Blu-ray in the mail to you. That simple. So give us a call and win a Blu-ray. Love to give it away. So tonight we're going to be talking about Star Trek Picard Countdown issue number one. A lot going on. We're going to talk about how we think this is going to tie into the Picard TV series on CBS All Access, which is going to air on January 23rd. And with me, as usual, are my Trek-sperts. And we'll start off with Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. We got some cool weather, and I'm excited to start talking about Picard.
As am I, my friend. As am I. We also have Charles. He's out in Portland. Eric, he's out in Portland. How you doing, Eric?
I am doing great. Also excited to talk about this. This is probably one of the most interesting comics I've read in a long time, and I'm super excited about it. So glad to be here with you guys.
I went back and read it a second time just to see if I missed anything. And with us TJ, the shopkeeper from Freakopolis Geekery over in Whitehall, New York. How you doing tonight, TJ?
I'm doing very well. Good to be back in the comic corner. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about Picard Countdown.
Now, this is an oddity. I've decided that because Picard is such an important character in Star Trek lore, and because he has his own TV show coming up in January, that this entire show is going to be dedicated to Picard. So that's why Comic Corner is this Monday. But next Monday, which is the second Monday, is our usual Comic Corner. And we're going to have Star Trek Year 5, book number 7, I think.
That's right. Yeah. 8.
Yep,
it's 8. We started a new series, yeah.
And we're also going to be doing Aftershock.
Aftermath,
issue
number three,
the final issue in the three-part Discovery series, which was out. So we're going to be talking about that on Monday on our regularly scheduled Comic Corner. But, as I said, this is a Star Trek Picard special show. So, without any further ado,
we beam a section aboard for analysis. Make it so, number one.
TJ, take us away and fill us in. Get us started on Picard, and then we're going to talk about it.
All right, yeah. So as we said, we're talking about Star Trek Picard Countdown number one. This is the first issue in sort of the Countdown series has like a long legacy with Star Trek IDW comics. They tend to do these series before a major release. Like I don't know that they did one before Discovery, but the J.J. Abrams universe books, or rather movies, all got some. So this is kind of a continuing tradition for IDW, and it's going to be a three-issue miniseries. I quite like that format that we're beginning to see now. Aftermath, also a three-issue miniseries, and it lets the miniseries as a whole feel kind of like an episode. You know, you've got sort of three acts in a sense. So, yeah, this is our very first look at Picard. This was kept under tight wraps. They wouldn't even show the cover for some time because we know that it's, we've had some trailers and stuff, but this is the first real piece of heavier media that we're getting that's leading up to the highly anticipated Picard television show. And I am so angry at myself because I can see fingerprints on the cover of my comic because I've read it so many times since we got it. that's just the worst. But yeah, this is written by, as we were talking about in the pre-show, Kirsten Beyer and Mike Johnson, who, as we know, thanks to JK and our previous comic corners, are very involved with CBS in the production of the shows. And, you know, you can't get much closer with IDW than that pair. So this stuff is as close to canon, I think, as we'll get until the show. I don't remember the exact state of that question. I believe JK uses canon adjacent, but with them on the book, it's maybe even closer than that. And art by Angel Hernandez, who we've seen on some other Star Trek IDW books. And so we open on Earth in 2386. We've got a pair of Romulans sort of walking through some vineyards and are here to clearly make contact with Picard. One feeling very hopeful, Laris. The other sort of cagey about it, saying they're not welcome, they never will be. But Laris insists that they owe everything to the man who risked, or they owe it to the man who risked everything for them. Obviously talking about Picard, because you've got this cool shot of them outside this barn, and on the right is some presumably bottles of wine with Chateau Picard emblazoned on the side of the crate. So really great establishing scene there. But that's really all we get from them in this issue, because we flash back to 1 year prior on Mars, or in the orbit of Mars, at the Utopia Planitia shipyards. And you've got these great establishing shots of the shipyards and Geordi LaForge looking out at the sort of dry docks. And clearly there's a lot of hubbub, a lot of ongoing here at the shipyards. And we learn pretty quickly that is because he's building an entire new fleet. He's heading up the effort to build a whole new fleet. But Picard calls for Geordi, and they have a conversation at the through the view screen about Picard's time in Romulan space. He spent the past couple of years there. Fortunately, he says the Senate has yet to ban him altogether, and things are going pretty well as their mission enters a critical phase. This is the first time we get a shot at Picard in this book, and he's got a fancy new Starfleet digs that I think are pretty sharp looking. He looks good. And we also learned that Picard's captain of the USS Verity. I don't know how well known that was, if that's new information or not, but I'm sure we'll discuss it. So yeah, things are going well. We learned that Geordi is heading the construction of the relocation ships. The first wave is almost ready to go. And Picard is in Romulan space, towing the neutral zone in an effort to lead the sort of Romulan evacuation. Their star is about to go supernova, and they have about a year left before this ticking clock that we can't see sort of sets off, and the Romulan supernova star goes supernova, and all the many, many planets and peoples are jeopardized. But things seem to be going quite well, if, you know, only because of the efforts of some of our favorites in Geordi and in Picard. So we get a great shot next up of USS Verity flying through space, and a nice monologue from Picard, feeling very confident in Geordi, in that, you know, in his efforts to build this entire new fleet to evacuate the Romulan system. We get some background on that. Obviously, the Romulans were hesitant and very secret. about the fact that their star was going to go supernova, but sort of reluctantly took the aid from Starfleet, the Federation. And it's been 4 years, and several endangered worlds have been evacuated, although, you know, the relationship is still sort of on the rocks. So in that moment of sort of thought and reflection on the efforts, Picard is interrupted by his most capable first officer, Lieutenant Commander Raffi Musiker. To my knowledge, this is a new character. I might be wrong. But she seems, you know, quite cheery, kind of mischievous maybe. It insists on calling Picard JL for Jean-Luc, obviously. And we learn later that Raffi Musiker is Starfleet's foremost officer on Romulan affairs, so makes pretty good sense. But with that interruption, we learn that Home Office wants to divert the Verity to Uyat Beta, a Romulan colony on the edge of the blast zone, with just over 10,000 evacuees waiting for a ride. Picard kind of questions that. Obviously, he was told Uyat was uninhabited, but, you know, the Romulans and their secrets. So, you know, he's not too surprised, but definitely wonders if something's afoot. So they arrive there shortly after and are pretty quickly hailed, which comes to a surprise to Picard and the first officer. And we are met by Athis, the major domus of the governor of Uyat Beta. So sort of a managerial position for the planet on the whole. He asks just Picard and Musiker to beam down to the surface of the planet, solely them, and they are the only two that we see on the Verity the whole issue, which I found kind of interesting. You know, we don't know what the rest of the crew is looking like, or you know, I don't know that we need to, but I just thought it was interesting because they beam down to the planet surface and are quickly greeted by some Romulan guards and taken through some secret passages, of course, as Romulans will, and meet with Athis. Picard thinks this is kind of strange because he gets an uninterrupted, unencumbered view of the colony on the whole. They're taken onto this vista, that the sort of palatial looking area, to meet with Athis. And once he verifies they're there, they meet the governor Shiana, kind of very elven looking, long green robes and long hair. I mean, the Romulans are kind of elfish in general, but, you know, you're getting a lot of very fantasy vibes from this whole scene, in a sense. She kind of, you know, she knows who Picard is already. Hero of the Federation, vanquisher of the traitor Shinzon, and now savior of the Romulan people? Question mark. You know, she knows of him, but is wondering, is he going to be the one that's going to sort of, you know, carry through this mission? They begin to talk about what's happening and, you know, sort of get a ground plan together, hopefully to begin to evacuate the 10,000 inhabitants of this planet. They get a little view at what happens here. It's a sort of agricultural colony, and it just so happens they are a vineyard colony, obviously very near and dear to Jean-Luc Picard's heart. So we get to look at some of the fields and realize this. There's some other people on this planet. There's some natives, sort of primitive people. The Major Domus lets Picard know that there's possibly 4 to 5 million primitive people, native people on this planet, which of course changes the whole plan. That's not 10,000 people, that's 4 to 5 million 10,000 people, which has Picard a bit worried. The Romulans insist that those people can be left on the planet. They don't need to be worried about, you know, really their job, Picard's job, is to get the Romulans off the planet. That obviously causes a rift in the what seemed to be going pretty well relationship. So Picard demands to go back and see the governor. She denies him, you know, if he's not going to do what she asks, then they're going to take matters into their own hands and find a way to acquire the Verity, basically, And Picard and Music, are the first officer, will remain their guests until they can accomplish that. She does not want to evacuate the entire population. And so Picard and the first officer are sort of in prison, presumably. It looks as though they are, as the Verity floats amongst the space in orbit of Yacht Beta. Picard sort of regrets his actions here, thinking himself a fool for being so trusting in the redemption of an old enemy, as the unseen clock of the Romulan supernova ticks away, unknown when it will come to a head. And that's where we kind of close out, to be continued. That's the end of Act 1 of Picard Countdown Number 1. I thought this was a really great first issue. The story beats work really well. There's really only an A story, so not a lot of jumping back and forth. The way it explains what's happening, gets right into it, has us wondering what the two Romulans at the beginning are, on Earth for, presumably, is a really wonderful, storytelling device. The art is serviceable, somewhere between realistic and stylized. Par for the course for IDW, I think, but it does a good job. And I loved the characterization of the characters we already knew, like Geordi and Picard. I could hear the voices, their sort of VO in my mind while they were speaking, because the dialogue is just so true to their characters. I thought that was really great. Really brought me back. It's sort of laying the seeds for some of this stuff. I don't know exactly how this will translate to, or lead into Picard itself. I think the stuff at the beginning, that first page with the two Romulans on Earth, is probably the closest we're going to get to the series proper. So we'll see more from them, I'm sure, later in the 3-issue series. But overall, quite enjoyed it. I read it a couple times already. And has me getting pretty pumped for Picard, the television show. So what do you guys think?
Well, before we jump on, and we have Jamie with us. How you doing, Jamie?
Good.
Good. Jamie read the book as well, so she's looking forward to diving into it as well. But I wanted to throw out a couple of points that I noticed in the books. You guys can comment on them when we go around the room here. The first thing was the ship that Picard is captain of is, I didn't know this, but it's an Odyssey class ship from Star Trek Online. So people are saying this breaks canon because the Odyssey didn't come around, told this, that, the other thing. It's a video game. I don't even know if you would consider a video game quote unquote canon. But if this ship class is an Odyssey class and it is in the video game, then I would think it's more of an homage than actual canon. But be that as it may, Captain Picard is in command of his on Odyssey class starship. The Enterprise E is still in existence, because there's a line in the comic book where Picard says something to Geordi about, well, I'm content where I am. And Geordi says something like, well, the captain of the Enterprise is rather stubborn and wouldn't welcome you back. And people are saying, well, that would be Worf. Well, no, it wouldn't be Worf, because Worf is at the Klingon homeworld with Martok, if you remember the ending of Deep Space Nine, unless something has changed, which is totally possible. Could have happened. So there's that. He also goes on to say that Troy and Riker are happily on the Titan at this point in time. So we know that they're on the Titan right now. We know that they're on Earth when Picard starts, because we see them there. So at some point between now and Picard, they're going to end up back on Earth. So there's that. What else? Yes, the governor of the Romulan planet had blonde hair. Did anyone catch that? Romulans don't have blonde hair. Well, except for one. So this particular Romulan, I'm assuming, must be in the bloodline of Tasha Yar, because Romulans don't have blonde hair. So we've heard rumors that Tasha Yar would be making an appearance in season 2 of Picard. So this might be a precursor. maybe it's not. You guys can share your thoughts on that. And the other thing that I noticed in it that I wanted to throw out is that on the planet, the other life forms that the Romulans want to sacrifice and don't want Jean-Luc to rescue is very similar to the plot line that we saw in Star Trek Insurrection, where the Federation wanted to sacrifice these 600 people and Picard fought them and refused to do it. It's very similar to that. So this is definitely in Picard's character. And the number one takeaway from this comic book that I wanted to throw out to you guys is that Captain Picard's first officer, the one Rafi that refers to him as JL, we already know who this character is. If you saw the trailers for Star Trek Picard, you've seen this character. You know who she is. We see her in the trailer. She's the character that's living in the house at the base of Gorn Rock. And Picard goes to see her and she says, oh, another unauthorized rescue mission or something along those lines. That's her. So she was his first officer in this book. So before I share my thoughts on the book, I just wanted to throw those things out to you guys to kick around a little bit. And we'll start off with Eric. So what did you think about the book? And did you notice anything that I had mentioned that you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I'd like to talk about the timing of the book. So we have been told so far that Picard has been set 20 years after Star Trek Nemesis. And Star Trek Nemesis happens in the year 2379. So that means that gives us a working date of the Picard series of 2399. This book is set in 2385. So this is set some 14 years before the Picard series. So I think what we're getting here is we are getting the story that becomes the first domino in a series of dominoes that will fall, that will eventually lead to the Picard and the Rafi that we see in the Picard series, which is 14 years after this book. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody was on board with that this is not occurring right before the series. This is occurring some time before the series occurs. Secondly, I thought one of the most brilliant things about this book was the opening page, because the opening page not only establishes that we're going to be talking about Romulans in this book, but it sets it at Chateau Picard. And then, of course, later on in the book, way at the very end, as Picard is talking with Atheus and Governor Shiana, they're standing amongst Romulan grapes, presumably for maybe some type of Romulan wine. I'm assuming it's not Romulan ale, because I assume that's some sort of fermented thing, more beer-like. but maybe it is the grapes. I'm not sure how Romulan ale is made. Point is, there's this direct connection right from the beginning, like the first page of the book and almost the last page of the book, that surrounds vineyards, which also is what we've seen in the posters leading up to Picard. So there's this whole like vineyard theme. So I really like that I think in 2399, we are going to Picard's happy place, which is a vineyard somewhere. And yet there's going to be all this emotional strife associated or rather counterbalanced, I guess, by the kind of tranquility of the vineyards and stuff. So I just thought this book really set that up brilliantly. Of course, we know we're talking about the Romulans. We know we're talking about their star-going supernova. I love this whole idea that Picard, at this point, is still in charge of a ship, and that he actually selected Rafi Musiker, which, by the way, her last name, Musiker, is musician in German. I don't know if that will become significant or not, but it's a German word that is musician. She's supposed to be the foremost expert on the Romulans. And so that's why he chose her for this ship. And I love that. And of course, I don't know a lot about Stowe, but I do know these Odyssey class ships are supposed to be really big. So evacuating 10,000 people might be possible. I'm not going to say yes or no, because I really don't know. But I know these things are significantly larger than the Enterprise E. And so I thought that was cool that they, like you said, Jim, kind of paid an homage back to the game that I think a lot of people have used as a connector. You know how we've talked about for years Star Trek didn't really have these little connectors between its various series. You know, there was like a long drought between TNG era stuff and Discovery era stuff, except for the Kelvin timeline stuff. So I think a lot of people use Stowe as their connector through time. So I like that they actually gave that a little bit of respect. But the last thing I'll say is fundamentally, I completely agree with you, Jim, about the Insurrection connection. This story is not going to be about necessarily about the Romulan xenophobia, which I do think they have a severe xenophobia, and I think that we all know that. In fact, there's kind of a side comment in this book about such a strange species, you know, the governor says something like that. But it is going to be about the Romulans' kind of cultural frame of reference, looking at these indigenous folks as primitives. I mean, these folks are probably just technologically not up to where the Romulans are, but the way that Atheus talks about them, he's like, oh, you know, they're such primitives, and except, you know, the Romulans brought them culture in exchange for their labor. And Musiker immediately, you know, identifies that as forced labor, or as, you know, I don't know if you want to call it indentured servitude or slavery or what, but that sets off Picard's red lights, you know, red alert immediately. And he immediately tries to take action and gets jailed for it. So we're going to get a story about a moral Picard. It's going to involve xenophobia slash racism slash, you know, cultural differences. And I am totally on board. This book was so cool. It had so many great points to it. And I think it really leads nicely into the series. I'll be curious to see how far they take this. If this, you know, if this three issues only happens, if they all happen 14 years before the show, or if we see some advancement of time along the way, I'll be really curious about that.
Well, I think it's great because so far, the Picard that we've seen in this comic book is pretty much the Picard that we know and love from the TV show. He hasn't changed.
He hasn't changed at all. And in fact, like, he's the one who got this whole Romulan thing started by, you know, I rewatched Nemesis recently, and although I still don't think it's an amazing movie, there's some really cool things in that movie that if you now know that there's a Picard series coming, I suggest you rewatch Nemesis too, because it will color how you think about the series. And in fact, they reference back here, right? TJ said something about the Slayer of Shinzon or the Conqueror of Shinzon that they mentioned in this book. So there's a direct Nemesis tie-in in the book. And I think that the Nemesis story is what launches us into the Picard series.
Yeah, I'm so psyched about the Picard series. It's going to be awesome, and I'm so looking forward to issue number 2. But we're going to take a very quick commercial break here, and when we come back, we still have to hear from Jamie, and we still have to hear from Charles. So don't touch your dial. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
This podcast is brought to you in part by the Freakopolis Geekery, the premier upstate New York comics and game shop. Centrally located between Saratoga Glens Falls, Ticonderoga, and Rutland, Vermont, the Geekery is a haven for pop culture and science fiction fans. For Star Trek fans, the Geekery features board games like Ascendancy, as well as awesome gaming titles like Star Trek Adventures RPG from Modiphius, Star Trek Away Team Zero Clicks, and of course, Star Trek Attack Wing ship-to-ship tactical combat for the tabletop. The Geekery hosts casual play sessions, learn-to-play sessions, and sanctioned organized play tournaments with limited edition prize support. You'll also find comics and trade paperbacks at Freakopolis, including Star Trek titles from IDW. Lots of issues are in stock, and special orders are no problem. Whether you visit in person by shuttlecraft or beam in online to Freakopolis.com, you'll find yourself right at home at the Freakopolis Geekery.
And we're back. So, anyways, we're talking about Star Trek Picard Countdown issue number 1, which is the first issue in a 3-issue series, which is going to lead up into Star Trek Picard, which is going to premiere on CBS All Access on January 23rd. And with us right now, we have Jamie. Jamie, what did you think about this book?
I loved it. I'm really looking forward to seeing the Picard show, and January 23rd can't get here any sooner. But having said said that, I really did appreciate the Romulans. I mean, I did notice the Romulan with the blonde hair, and I thought that was a little weird because, as we all know, Romulans don't have blonde hair, and I really like the person who did that panel, really drew that really well, and the colors all match. The whole book was great. They made you think that Picard was right there in front of you. All the details on his uniform looked accurate. All the dialogue and the dialogue boxes seemed to make sense. And I really liked the whole thing with Tashi Yar. And then I really do hope that Picard can be the commander of this ship that he's commanding now, which is really nice. And I think that's going to be a great segue into the show. And I don't understand why people are complaining about this book already. If you go online, there's always someone that has to say something bad about everything they make. But I think that the ending of this book was a great dramatic irony. And, I mean, it was kind of ironic the way that it ended, having read the whole book. And I hope they go on more and continue the story with what happens with the Romulans as well. And I would give this book a, I want to say 8.5 out of 10.
8.5. And what I'm waiting for Baby Yoda to come and save them. But that's just me. I could be wrong.
Hell yeah.
I have spoken.
Mix in your franchises again, buddy.
This is the way. But anyways, a little bit of fun there. Yeah, I think I really do like this book. And like Jamie said, I think the artwork is excellent. The full fold-out page where we see Picard. Oh, I did have I was a little bit, not confused, but I was under the impression, let me put it this way, that admirals don't command starships. Captains command starships. Even Admiral Kirk had Captain Spock. Now, Spock was the first officer, but, you know, so Admiral Picard and his first officer, Raffi, there's got to be a captain on that ship. As far as I know, admirals aren't directly given command of starships. They have a flagship, but they're not the captain of a ship. Am I wrong in that assumption?
No, he absolutely, as an admiral, would be in charge of a fleet of ships for sure. But there's no reason that an admiral can't also command a ship. And they may be doing that in this case simply because of Picard's direct connection with the Romulans and the fact that he's not really acting as an ambassador here. He's always acting as an ambassador, but presumably they wanted him in command of the evacuation ship for this colony for some reason. So generally speaking, no. But in this case, I do think he's in command of the ship.
And before we move on to hear what Charles thinks about the book, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention, which I thought was pretty cool. The uniforms, you know, Jamie touched on it a little bit when she was talking about the book. The uniforms are very Star Trek Online-y. In fact, I'm pretty sure I play Klingons in the game, so I apologize for if I'm ignorant on this, but I think that you can actually choose a uniform in the game that's very, very similar to that one. Am I correct or am I incorrect on that? Anybody know?
I don't play the game,
I don't really know.
So. Yeah, I mean, when I do a Google search on them, there are definitely like cool-looking uniforms that kind of have a panelization to the top shoulder area that is similar. Not exactly like that, but they're the kind of idea of not just having one section of color and one section of black, but of taking that top color and kind of, you know, allowing it to break out of its mold a little bit and travel down the sleeves and down the sides of the uniform. That is very Star Trek Online from what I can tell from just generally searching Google on it.
And one more thing I wanted to throw out there to see if you guys had picked up on and maybe can clear my clouded mind, because I'm getting old and senile, so these things kind of all meld together. But Rafi is Picard's first officer, yet she's wearing gold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've changed the command colors before, so that would be nothing new. But did anyone else notice that?
Well, your Starfleet color is not based on the position that you have right now, but it's based on the division within which you came up through Starfleet. So because she came up through operations, presumably, she has a gold-colored uniform. That doesn't mean that she can't be first officer, just like it didn't mean that Data couldn't be first officer. It just so happened that he wasn't first officer on the Enterprise, but he wouldn't have switched to a red uniform if he had become the first officer.
Yeah, but Worf did, and so did Geordi.
Well, that's a good point.
I was just wondering, that's my understanding
because it's all my understanding is partially based on the RPG on Star Trek Adventures, where your uniform color is based on the division that you came up through, operations, command, science. So I don't know. It's a good question.
Maybe I'm digging too deep for clues that aren't there. I don't know, but I'm picking this apart, looking for clues, and I noticed that she wasn't wearing a red uniform. She was wearing a yellow uniform. So I didn't know if that was significant or me just being too picky. I don't know, but I wanted to throw that out there as well. But before we go too far and dig too deep, we still have to hear from Charles. So Charles, what did you think about Star Trek Picard Countdown issue number one?
Okay, let me go over some stuff. Is he in charge of the ship, or is he in charge of the fleet that his number one passes on instruction to the captain? I'm wondering if the number one might be his direct assistant and maybe not the direct captain.
That could be.
Yeah, there's the
because
one
we've
shot.
Had admirals, we've had admirals on board the Enterprise in TOS, and occasionally admirals have tried to take over the ship when they feel the captain's not doing what they should. For TJ's question, when we talked to JK in August, they said this series will lead into Picard, and we will meet characters from the Picard series in this series of comics. So it may be comic adjacent, but it's near canon, as close as canon probably as you're going to get. Now, I looked at some of I skimmed while we were talking the other countdown. In that one, Picard is a diplomat, emissary, so he could be taking his admiral duties into an emissary at that point. Geordi is tagged, they talk about him as Mr. LaForge. So I don't know if it means he's not in Starfleet anymore, or maybe just the fact that they're giving him a Mr. title and recognizing because he might be in Starfleet engineers.
He's definitely got the pips. He's got the pips on his uniform, and he's wearing the uniform, so.
Right. Well, remember, the countdown is a few months. The countdown to Star Trek 2009 is a few months later. So maybe things have changed from where we're seeing it to where that is taking over.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Worf in there, and Worf is probably an ambassador or a Klingon admiral. And Data is in command of the Enterprise. Now, as we've tied in, we don't know who the commander of the Enterprise is. In fact, I was talking with Nate last night. I think the supposedly I get might be through Star Trek Online. The Enterprise F is an Odyssey class, but that comes in a few years from now, which may mean that may be representing the ship that's a future replacement of the Enterprise. You were saying, Jim?
Well, I as far as I see, when we're talking about Star Trek Online, it's a very very slippery slope when we start talking about that, because as far as, I mean, you guys, please correct me if I'm wrong, because, I mean, I'm often wrong. Just ask my wife, she'll tell you. But I was under the impression that the Enterprise is always the first of the best of the newest of the ships when they come off the line. Like, the Enterprise was the first Sovereign ship at the time, was the flagship, was the first Galaxy class ship, so on and so forth. So for the Enterprise F to be an Odyssey, if there's already Odysseys out serving, would kind of would violate that unwritten Star Trek rule, would it not?
It would, if that's an official Starfleet regulation.
Well,
yeah. I actually am not sure about that, because I don't think that the original Enterprise was the first Constitution class ship. I do think it's true for the Galaxy and the Sovereign. Actually, I'm not sure about the Sovereign. I'm absolutely sure that the Galaxy was the first. Did they say that the Sovereign was as well?
Well, it's the only class of that, same thing with the Enterprise B, the Enterprise C. It's the only class of that ship that we've seen of that name.
We've seen of
that
name.
So I don't know.
But there may be more of them out there we don't know about.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is like, you know, Star Trek gives us a fairly narrow view of what the fleet looks like, except for like the Battle of Wolf 359, where we get to see a significant amount of the fleet. So it's hard to.
And the Dominion War.
And the Dominion, you're right. And that scene in the Dominion War is so good. Yeah. Well,
but I was always under the assumption that the Enterprise, being the flagship of the Federation, was always, when they were going to commission a new Enterprise, it was always the newest of whatever ship class happened to be, like in this case, the Sovereign class. And then they'd roll them out left and right, but the Enterprise would be the flagship. And regardless of how old it got, it still would be the flagship. That's the way I understood it, but that doesn't, anyways. So go on, Charles.
Okay. Get myself back on track. Okay, we got some of the back history in place. This one definitely, I had to kind of go back and look at the connection and realizing the two that we see on Earth are Romulan. At first I thought maybe they were the other species. Then I looked at the other species and seeing their color tone, okay, they're not. They are Romulan. But they are fascinated by the grapes. And then it's interesting how the fact that we see them back on their other planet with harvesting of something that looks like could be some kind of fermented alcohol, such as our wine. So it got me to the point of kind of thinking there that, yeah, there's definitely trying to reconnect this entire episode of the Vineyard. So it should be interesting to see what happens in there. I think everybody covered a lot of the good points in the books. But definitely I think it's going to be seeing this, it's like, okay, you got me definitely interested in what's going on, what's going to happen next. And we got to wait a month and see the next issue and see what happens next month.
So Charles, how many chevrons? Jamie gave this an 8.5. How many chevrons would you give issue number one of Picard Countdown?
I'll agree with her. I think an 8.5 is good.
8.5. And how about you, Eric? How many chevrons?
I think I got to go with a 9 because I really like the setup and I really like that kind of Picard, like deep within his soul essence type story that they're going to tell here. So I'm going to give it a 9.
How about you, TJ?
Yeah, I think an 8.5 sounds pretty good with me. It's definitely got the potential, I think, to become a 9 or 9 and change miniseries if things continue the way they are.
Yeah, I think, first of all, like back to what Jamie was saying, I really like the way the panels flowed. I like the layout. Sometimes the panels can be confusing and they don't quite flow, you know, easy to read and follow. But this book really, really nailed the panels down and they really moved along. Like I said, at the top of the hour, the full page pullout of Picard's ship at the beginning. In fact, when I picked up the book from TJ the other day, the first page I opened up, I looked at that and I said, look at this ship. Remember, TJ? I said,
you did. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
I was like, this is impressive. I really love the colors. I think they did a really good job with the colors. The colors are really vibrant and really jump off the page. The artwork is top-notch, as it usually is in an IDW Star Trek book. And the characters are spot-on. I mean, this Picard that we're seeing so far is really Picard. I mean, he is the Picard that we've all grown to love. And we haven't seen him break away from Starfleet yet like we know he will because we've seen the trailer for Picard. So we know that break hasn't happened. He hasn't become disillusioned yet with Starfleet. He is still the man. And so I think the characterization is just outstanding, what we've seen so far. And I'm interested to see where they take the Rafi character because we know that he hooks up with her in the show. So I'm interested to see how they develop their relationship. And like Eric said, this is like, 18 years before?
14.
This is 14
years. Yeah.
So, you know, they still have some time to develop that relationship before whatever happens and Picard leaves Starfleet and then comes back much, much later. And, you know, we also got the Borg. You know, this book doesn't seem to be touching on that yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we know from the Picard trailer that the Borg somehow get their hands on Romulans get their hand on Borg technology somehow, and that they're in control of a Borg cube. So I'm wondering if we're going to see any of that in these three issues of Countdown, or if it's only going to center on this race of beings on this planet. I don't know, but it would be great if we did get a little touch on the Borg situation, because the Romulans are really sneaky and they're really xenophobic and they really are keeping to themselves and they don't want the Federation to know too much of what's going on or where their people are. So they could easily have, you know, some Borg technology hidden that the Federation just has not discovered yet. For all we know, maybe Picard finds some Borg slaves on a colony somewhere. We don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. But at any rate, yeah, I'm right there with you guys. I think 8.5 is a perfect place to be for this book because I can easily see it moving up to a 9.5 later if they continue in the fashion that this book is. I'm very impressed with it. I'm really, really liking what I'm seeing. I'm liking what I'm reading. And they're doing a phenomenal job, just like they always do. So before we wrap it up, does anybody have anything they'd like to say in closing that maybe we haven't touched on or something that you wanted to bring up that we didn't bring up? Anything, Eric?
I don't think so. I just think that I'm I just wanted to say one last thing about the fact that they set this so far ahead of the series, I think is very interesting. And I wanted to, I guess I did kind of touch on this, but this as the first domino that causes the series to happen. It's cool because they're going to bookend the whole thing. They've given us the very, very beginning of the story. They didn't want Nemesis to be the beginning of the story. They wanted this to be the beginning of the story. So I think that's great.
Well, the one thing, too, is that Picard has been out of Starfleet for quite some time
right. When
we see him in Picard. So whatever happens that causes him to leave happens, well, I would say, relatively close to the events we're reading about right now, I would assume.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you think that maybe the way this story is going to go is not going to go Picard's way in these comic books, right?
Right. He's not going to come out on top like he usually does.
That's right.
How about you, Charles? Anything you want to add that we haven't mentioned, or anything that came that you thought of?
Nope.
Nothing.
Other than just nothing. I was a caboose, so I think a lot of stuff got hit on already. But definitely, just what's going to happen next.
I'm looking forward to it. How about you, Jamie?
Yeah, anything? This is a great book. It definitely has a lot of potential. I highly recommend reading it. If you haven't already and you're listening, I would suggest going to your nearest comic book shop or bookstore and pick this issue up. And definitely tune in on January 23rd for the Picard series.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And by the way, if you guys don't have this issue, you can always get it from TJ. He'll be more than happy to order one for you and send it right to you. Just go to Freakopolis. There's a link on our Facebook page and send you right to TJ, and he'll take care of you. TJ, you started the whole show off with Picard. Anything that we didn't touch on or anything that we touched on that you'd like to comment on before we wrap things up?
Oh, man, Jamie stole my thunder. That's where I was going to go.
Sorry.
Swing by your local comic book store if this sounds interesting. There's a lot in there I didn't touch on, a lot of great moments, and my overview was only so comprehensive, so very worth picking up. Go to comicshoplocator.com to find the nearest comic shop near you. Love doing this podcast, so thank you for having me. We'll be back next week with two more issues, some returning titles like Star Trek Year 5 and Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, finishing up that miniseries. So if you've been following along with those, you'll want to tune in. And once again, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always
especially
it's always
really
fun.
That, especially book three.
Yeah,
that
book three.
I'm excited to talk about that one too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Now, TJ, is there anything new? Have they announced any new Discovery books beyond Aftermath yet?
No new Discovery books. The new previews just came out in shops this week. That's the catalog that says tells you everything, solicits all the books coming out. This month is for books coming out in February, and it's just, I believe, the final Picard issue, I think, or maybe it's a trade. And they're doing a Valentine's Day special, which is kind of cool, kind of funny. It's got Spock on the front. I think it might tie in with Year 5, but let me check real quick.
Valentine's Star Trek issue. That's interesting.
Star Trek Year 5 Valentine's Day special is, definitely caught my eye. That's coming out, obviously, on February 12th. It's not even on Valentine's Day, but it's pretty close. And so it's like a one-shot from Star Trek, I guess, for Valentine's Day. So that'll be, I suppose we'll talk about it in March. That definitely caught my eye. No new Discovery books yet. Things seem to be slowing down a little bit, but I'm sure with the new series coming out, we'll get some announcements before too long.
Now, I'm wondering, I'm just throwing the can out there to see who kicks it back at me. I'm wondering if maybe they'll do a Discovery countdown because they have 900 and some odd years to cover in between. And maybe they're going to do a Discovery countdown and kind of catch us up on what's going on, maybe, as we get closer to Discovery. Maybe.
I mean, that would be sweet. Maybe. 1,000 years and like 10 issues or something.
That, you know, that would be cool.
100-year jump every issue. That'd be sweet.
We'll have to wait.
They probably don't want to fill in. They don't want to fill in that much information, you know.
We'll have to drop a bug in JK's ear and see what happens. But anyways, you know what, guys? It was great to chat with you guys again. It's been, like I said, it's been a while since we talked because of the holidays in there, so we didn't have a show. So it's great to talk with you guys again. And I want to say thank you to TJ for hanging out with us on Comic Corner from Freakopolis Geekery. Thank you, TJ.
Of course.
And I also want to say thank you to Eric for hanging out with us from Portland. Thank you, Eric.
Great time as always. Thanks to all of you.
And also thank you to Charles all the way out in Las Vegas.
Always love talking about IDW.
And I saved the best for last. Thank you to Jamie all the way from the other room.
Live long and prosper.
So, like I said, we are going to be back on Monday. We got a couple of Star Trek issues to talk about on our regularly scheduled Comic Corner. And this was our special Star Trek Picard show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please check out our Facebook page, Trek Talkin' and Beyond. And there's a link right on there to the Freakopolis Geekery page. So if you want to order any of the great books that we've talked about, you know, on previous shows, or Star Trek Picard or Star Trek Attack Wing or anything like that, you can find a link on our Facebook page to Freakopolis Geekery, and TJ will be more than happy to take care of you. So I hope everybody had a safe and happy Thanksgiving. I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. I'm Uncle Jim. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys on Thursday. We'll be back on Thursday night, 7:30, Trek Talking and Beyond. We're going to be talking about The Mandalorian, Episode 3 and 4, and Baby Yoda, and a few other things. That's going to be great. And we have some Star Trek news to talk about. Section 31, Star Trek 4, the possible new bad guy, and a returning character on Star Trek Discovery that we all thought was dead. You'll have to tune in Thursday night to find out more information. So thanks for hanging with us, guys. Be good to each other, and we'll catch you Thursday night on Trek Talking. Good night, everybody.
May all
prosper. Good night, guys.
Let's see what's out there.